Hello and welcome to Select Match Type. My name is Simon Cowgill and I'm joined as ever by Christopher Ellis. Hi Chris, how are you?
I am very well, Si. How's yourself?
Yeah, good. I probably don't sound it, but I sound worse than I feel, to be honest. So yeah, just coming out of the other side of a cold. Sick of hearing that everyone's got it. That's no help to me at all, is it?
Be fair, screaming along at a Simple Plan gig probably does not help.
And then Bowling for Soup tonight, where I'm sure my voice will disappear again after that. So the lives that we choose to lead, eh, Chris?
Indeed. If anyone wonders why we're tearing through this pay-per-view, it's not because there's nothing worth talking about.
It's quite thin on the ground, let's say, in terms of content for this week. We're jumped in our time machine once again, the 15th of February, 1998. No Way Out, brackets off Texas. It's weird how they play sort of fast and loose with the rules of naming this pay-per-view, because 80% of the time they just call it No Way Out, and then the other times they remember, oh yeah, out of Texas, so we're not just spouting NWO over and over again, which is obviously quite big in WCW at this point in time.
Putting of Texas in brackets still doesn't help any way, shape or form. That pay-per-view is still called You Can't Get Out of Texas.
Yeah, exactly. There's no way out. So we talked about this on the previous episode, but The UK number one box office, US box office, it's all Titanic themed. So the UK single is My Heart Will Go On, and as it will be for months and months on end, the US and UK box office number one is Titanic. So yeah, we've discussed it before. It's basically about a woman talking to her grandkids about the time that she shagged a homeless guy.
Absolutely, yes. Again, very fitting. I saw a meme this morning about, yeah, the husband dies first. He's there in heaven waiting for her as she walks right past him and starts snogging the Irish guy that she met once.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, that wouldn't be realistic, because Leonardo DiCaprio would Kate Winslet's too old for Lenny Deed these days anyway, isn't she? So obviously last episode was the Royal Rumble that we covered. Between the Rumble and No Way Out, we talked about the fact that Mike Tyson was going to appear on Raw. He appeared after the night after the Royal Rumble, and Vince McMahon was about to announce his role for WrestleMania, but Austin came in and interrupted him, gave him the fingers, and they pushed each other, and Austin got right in his face. On the back of that, Shawn Michaels valiantly offered to step aside and still and have Austin versus Tyson. Obviously, he'd still keep the title, but they could fight to determine who's the baddest man on the planet. But Mike Tyson wasn't cleared to wrestle, apparently, so he is announced as a special ring enforcer for WrestleMania. Not that there's nothing to build towards at No Way Out, but we're already just skipping past it and going to WrestleMania.
Not cleared to wrestle or leave the state of New York.
Yeah, very true. And so the week-to-week stuff that's been happening on Raw has been largely focused on DX and Austin. So Austin stole the title from Shawn Michaels. It feels like that's the third time we've had that happen within the last few pay-per-views, that someone has nicked the title and sort of held it ransom. What if maybe they just thought it was a good idea and got stuck on it? But yeah, it seems to have been a recurring theme recently.
That's the thing, you pick an idea and you just ruin it. You go, that works.
That works.
You stick with that. I'm not the go-to off topic, but I was listening to Gorilla Position this morning, a very welcome back podcast to see Gorilla Position back on the...
Even though you drove him away, Chris, yeah.
Even though I drove away. Look, I can't help the fact that he refuses to denounce the right-wing Linda McMahon just to keep access to WWE and their stars. That's just the way it goes. But I still love the content they put out for a great deal of the time. And they're on about a Rock Triple H two-man power trip. And you go, no. It's like, when you look at Despot's running WWE and what's happening with Vince, you go, is that what you want to hark back to? Do you want to, at this point, go, what we want to remind everyone of is an evil boss character running around?
Yeah, it's very true. yeah, remind everyone of someone taking advantage of their position and manipulating people and stuff. But, yeah, what could go wrong in that scenario?
But yeah, so no, I'm, there's some things that should be left in the past, and the two-man power trip, while great at the time, and is not something that anyone wants to be harking back to in modern day WWE.
No, fair enough. So other things that have been happening on screen. So DX basically stated their regret about what had happened to The Undertaker and feigned concern for him as they looked in around the arena in a hearse. It turned out that was filled with women, and then DX's music played and they had a barbecue in the ring to basically take the piss out of the fact that he'd been set on fire with the... A barbecue basically gives DX free reign to make as many hot dog and penis jokes as they like. They also, I had this slightly wrong last time, so I mistakenly said in the Rumble episode that it was the, I didn't sleep with that intern, we were up all night, that happened between now and then. Triple H was still injured just after the Rumble, so had Goldust in disguise face off against Owen Hart. Owen Hart beat Goldust, and Sergeant Slaughter said that it was quite convincing, so therefore the victory stood, and Owen Hart is now European champion. That's not how that works, Slaughter. That is abusing your position.
I quite understand it if Triple H goes, no, I'm just going to sub someone in for me. If they lose that match,
it should still count.
This should count.
Yeah, fair. Fair enough. And then the other sort of feud that's been going on and links to our main event at the moment, Savio Vega. Irrelevant Savio Vega. The New Age Outlaws have been carrying on their feud with Cactus Jack and Chainsaw Charlie, and they put the two of them in a dumpster, and the New Age Outlaws pushed them off the stage, hitting the concrete. And so the theme for our main event is basically everyone is taking things too far. I mean, if you're going to bring a chainsaw to the ring, you can't start accusing people of taking things too far and being too violent, can you?
No, true. Throw it over the top rope for having a limb locked off. That's the only way to be eliminated from the ring. Still love that gag. Still works.
Shawn Michaels was originally advertised for our main event, which is a four-on-four tag match. But he has been removed because they're still not sure of the severity of his back injury that he suffered at the Rumble. It was slightly last minute in that he was only taken out of the main event on the actual day of the pay-per-view. And it sort of shows as we go through that no one really has any idea what's fucking going on. And it's a bit of a shit show, which is why we end up with Savio Vega just randomly placed in the main event later on tonight.
I like the idea that he was just hanging around catering.
Yeah.
just came across the first.
You'll do. yeah, exactly that. So the show itself then, so we get a package, as I say, focusing on whether people have gone too far in the build to the show. We've got a clip of Kane setting the casket on fire from the Rumble, and the New Age Outlaws pushing the dumpster off with Chainsaw Charlie and Cactus Jack off the stage. We also have Austin described as a renegade that would rather spit in the devil's face than shake his maker's hand, which is meaningless, but I like the verbiage.
Yeah, it's one of those things that sounds really cool until you pick it apart and go, that means nothing at all.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to be honest, the start of this pay-per-view... And looking at the list of matches, I got the sense that this was maybe the biggest filler pay-per-view we've covered on the podcast so far, Chris.
It is a pay-per-view of zero consequences in any way, shape or form.
When you compare it to last year, where the pay-per-view before WrestleMania, we had the four-way elimination to determine who would face off with the champion. I know there was the controversy at the end of the Rumble and we haven't got the same this time. But yeah, as you say, there's nothing of any consequence that happens tonight. So our first match, we've got Mark Miro and Manson Dust. So the build to this, they're facing off with the Headbangers, and The build for this one, Miro continued to be jealous of Sable on screen. Someone had sent her flowers and chocolates, so he went a bit crazy with making her wear a robe that said that she was property of Mark Miro, and told her that he'd found someone that could watch his back more effectively, and that was Goldust. So both him and Miro had had singles matches against the Headbangers, and because of the Headbangers pretending to like rock music, Goldust decided to dress up as Marilyn Manson, so that's why we now have Manson Dust here tonight.
Perfectly logical.
Yeah.
Perfectly logical.
Why would you not? Yeah, exactly. As part of it as well, so Sable was unhappy with being sent to the back by Mark Miro, and so she is feuding with both Goldust and Luna at the same time as her man is teaming with them, which makes for a very confusing scenario, to be fair. The match itself, then, that there really wasn't much to this at all. The heels, as we've seen over the last few pay-per-views, there is a very specific formula in late 97, early 98 tag teams, in that tag team matches, in that the heels mainly dominate and we just get a few hope spots from the faces. Thrasher takes a snake eyes onto the steps and gets completely busted open. And then the mat is covered. You love to see it. The mat is absolutely covered in blood for the majority of the night. Except, weirdly, the last two matches. I don't know if they like scrub it in between matches or something. But yeah.
Well, they've already lost Sean. What do you get it with Austin getting tetanus?
Yeah. WrestleMania main event is gone because everyone's ill from too much blood being spread around the mat. Yeah, it wouldn't be the best scenario, would it? A few highlights from this one. So the Headbangers have a nice double team as Mosh superplexes Thrasher onto Miro, which I thought was cool. Towards the end, we get a hot tag to Mosh, which gets stopped by Luna's interference as she hits a low blow. That draws Sable out. Why Sable comes out, I'm not quite sure, because if anything, her boyfriend is going to win the match on the back of Luna's help, but... Anyway, so that
shows what an awful person she is, wanting to steal the spotlight from Mark Miro.
Yeah, exactly. Miro was right all along. Yeah, exactly. So that distraction allows the Headbangers in the ring to switch places, which means that Thrasher can get the roll up for the win. The one problem I had with that finish was, yeah, they swap places, but one of them has a massive fucking gash on the top of his head and is pissing blood. So you should probably be able to tell them apart.
And the fact they don't look the same.
Yeah. Just because they wear sort of semi-matching outfits doesn't mean they look
t-shirt.
Identical. After the match, Sable and Luna try and get to each other, so Goldust carries Luna away, and then Sable and Mark Miro argue, so Miro gets shoved down. He storms to the back with Sable left in the ring. What did you think of the opening match then, Chris?
I nearly said it was fine. It's, you know what? It was a match.
It's correct, hard, yes.
Yeah, it's hard because you think if you'd have gone to the house show and you'd gone and that had opened and everyone's enjoying it enough and you got the Headbangers being busted open and you got a few decent spots, you got the faces winning at the end. You know, if it's a house show, you go, okay, that was quite an enjoyable match. It's just the problem is, with something that means even with Sable being involved, really means nothing with the Headbangers being involved in it and not taking this anywhere with them afterwards, means that you have a match that, yeah, is perfectly fine and the crowd seemed to be enjoying it for an opening match, but through a thing that we'll have the whole way through, it's hard to get invested in it when there's zero consequences.
Yeah, you did touch on something there, though. So even though there's very little consequences throughout the entire night, the crowd are pretty hot throughout, apart from the tag match that we'll come on to where no one made a sound for the entire night. But yeah, I thought the crowd were really strong tonight, despite the fairly pitiful offering that they've been given.
It's a big crowd as well. It's like, what, 16,000 or something?
Yeah, 16,000 there now.
Which, considering this... you wonder how far in advance the card was announced, because you go 16,000 bought in to go and see that card.
Yeah, you're not buying a ticket on the back of that. They did mention at one point, though, that it's the first time that this arena's had a pay-per-view since, I think they said 1987 or something. I didn't make a note of it. But yeah, it was definitely late 80s. So it's like 10 years since that they've had a pay-per-view there, which, I don't know, feels weird for Houston not to have had a pay-per-view in that length of time.
Yeah, it's a bit, I suppose, we feel hard done by when we've got a while with that. But I suppose you do often lose a sense of the sheer scale of the US absolutely. And how hard it is to get. It's like, what, 50-odd states, and they only do 12 pay-per-views a year. So you might only get one every 4 years, and that might be a 3-4 hour drive, depending on which state you're in and where you live.
Yeah, exactly. Backstage then, we've got Owen Hart, who's with Michael Cole. He's asked about whether he can coexist with Austin in the main event tonight. Owen Hart says he'll stay out of Austin's way if Austin stays out of his, and then turns his focus to Triple H. He tells us he's not done with Triple H despite having taken the European title, as I mentioned, and he's going to bust his legs. Bust his legs is a weird turn of phrase. Not quite as weird as kick his leg out of his leg, but Owen has a weird, weird patter when it comes to injuring people's legs, doesn't he?
He's got... Owen, bless him, he's not... I mean, the Hart family aren't the best at delivering a promo full stop, but he's slightly worse than Brett. He kind of gets too overexcited. He can see his brain thinking, what do I say next? And because he's so planned ahead for what he's going to say, he completely cocks up what he's in the middle of saying.
I think he's so much better on the mic where he's a heel. It sort of naturally fits him better. Whereas, yeah, when he's a face, he's, as you say, I think he thinks about things more and more. I think that's the big difference, isn't it? Out next, we get Sunny coming down to the ring as the guest announcer. She's in a pink jumpsuit. She looks great. Probably better than her orange jumpsuit that she's now in.
Topical.
Yeah, exactly. Well, not really. It was months ago. So she comes out as the guest announcer, as I say. It's weird. She tries to put on a bit of a Texan twang and it sounds really odd and slightly awkward.
Odd and slightly awkward. That's just the commentary for the whole of my last
thing. Oh, God, yeah.
So slightly awkward. Odd.
It is
and extremely racist.
So off-putting and racist, yeah, as you say. So we've got a light heavyweight title match. We've got Taka Michinoku versus Pantera. The build to this one, Pantera beat Brian Christopher in a number one contenders match. They then teamed up. Taka and Pantera then teamed up against Brian Christopher. And I can't even remember who it was. I didn't make a note of it. But Pantera turned on Taka after the match. So there was another tag team match with Christopher and Pantera taking on Taka and Aguila, I'm not sure how you say it. And then Pantera cheated to put some brass knucks in his mask and do a diving headbutt, which surely did as much damage to him as Taka Michinoku, but apparently not.
I quite like that as a visual, though.
Yeah. It sort of works, but yeah, logically it doesn't make a huge amount of sense. We've also got Brian Christopher on comms here, and as you already touched on, it's so distracting. JR is basically focused on the son dad gags. He at one point refers to Taka as slanty-eyed, which I guess is what you're saying about it being racist. And he's really focused on Pantera breaking Taka's neck. He uses the expression break his neck 4 or 5 times here. It was so off-putting through this entire match. When you watch in a Brian Christopher match and you can hear his laugh like through the hard cam, it's quite enjoyable. When you can hear it in a microphone in your ears, it's far from enjoyable. I was quite impressed here by Pantera. The action in ring was quite good. It was just a shame that it was sort of dominated by what was happening on commentary. So he hit a senton from inside the ring to the outside, hit a head scissors from the apron and a super Frankensteiner, a moonsault. He went for a second moonsault, but Taka moved out of the way. He hit a powerbomb, a missile dropkick, and a, a sadly weak-looking Michinoku driver for the win. I'm a big fan of the Michinoku driver, but this one just seemed to place him on the ground rather than actually drive his head into the mat.
I think the fact that whether they were selling, he couldn't do the first one with the back injury.
Yeah,
So they might have been in which case it's smart. In which case, the people there would have appreciated it. It's a smart piece of booking to have it that way. But then again, we had the crowd have exactly the same problems we always do when the light heavyweights are wrestling.
Yeah,
they're appreciative of what they can do, and they understand that they're skillful wrestling going on, but they have no interest in watching it.
Yeah, they're not.
They'd be quite happy to see it on network TV, but they don't want to watch it in an arena.
No, fair enough. After the match, Lawler and Brian Christopher are walking towards the back. Taka jumps on them from the outside, completely unprovoked, I might point out. Like, they weren't about to attack him or anything. He just dives off the top and splashes at them.
So I was going to say, without a mirror, there's a lot of heels being unfairly provoked and attacked.
Yeah. Yeah, they get a bad rep. Like, Mark Miro was right. Now we're siding with the king, whatever's next. So after Taka hits his splash, they circle the ring. Taka escapes through the crowd, and that's the loudest reaction we get for this match, him escaping through the crowd like a coward. Yes, it's an odd thing to happen as the big face to be scurrying away.
Yeah, jump them from the back, jump them from behind, then run off through the crowd.
Yeah, what a hero he is.
Well, you know what, he took his advantage and he took it.
That's what heroes do, exactly. Backstage, we've got Cactus Jack and Chainsaw Charlie with Kevin Kelly on the AOL machines, the laptops backstage. They tell us that they want revenge. Chainsaw Charlie calls his fist hospital and graveyard, and we're getting one of those tonight. He's going to murder someone, is what he's telling us, Chris.
He's just going to go to the graveyard. He's just going to go see his dead mum. I don't know.
Maybe. God, that's got morphed very quickly, didn't it? Next match, we've got the Quebecers taking on the Godwins. The Quebecers are back for a few weeks at least. Why they decided to bring the Quebecers back, I have no idea. They've got
this in a pay-per-view of no consequence is the most non-consequential of non-consequentialities matches.
Yeah. My exact note is this might be the most throwaway pay-per-view match that we've ever seen, Chris.
But it's up there. Yeah, it's got to be.
It's two heel teams. The crowd have no investment whatsoever. There's a semi-build to it in that they attack each other after matches on Raw just so they can get a match on pay-per-view. It just felt a way to get them on the card, but it's not even like they're getting them on a WrestleMania card. What it felt completely unnecessary for them to have this match.
Again, yeah, is as you say, there's that whole sense of, oh, we need to build this on the fly, which is you have to. It's really weird. You have to look at it, you go, okay, I'm interested. If Sean wasn't injured, what was the build going? What were they going to do in the room? What was the card? Was it going to be Triple H and
Owen Hart?
Were it going to be, say, Triple H and Shawn against Austin and Owen, and just do, which have been interesting with the problems between Owen and Austin.
Austin, have them
as a tag team against them two. And then if you're going to do that, you can then just freed up other people that have matches on the card.
Yeah, so we've got a four-man tag as our main event, and we've also got a five-man tag. So it feels like you could split those into a couple of matches and then not need to have the Quebecers taking on the Godwins and partway through the card. Yeah, it just feels completely necessary. But how much plans were scuppered by injury, we'll never know, I guess. This was absolutely shite, by the way. Just two heel teams with no investment from the fans. And the end is One of the Quebecers gets bounced into the ropes. Henry Godwin grabs him from behind. They hit a clothesline for the win, and that's it. And then the Godwins come in after the match and hit them with their buckets. I have nothing to say about this other than the fact that it was shite, in my view.
I think we should leave that in the annals of things that happened, but we don't.
But we never want to discuss again. Yeah, exactly. Backstage, we've got the New Age Outlaws with Doc Hendricks. They have no idea who they're going to be partnered with and seem incensed by the fact that they're the tag team champions and no one seems to be respecting them, and they should have a say on who their partner is going to be. So they're going to go and find Triple H to discuss it. They're improving all the time. I think these guys are sounding stronger on the mic. They're still like... The New Age Outlaws will only ever work as a shit-eating heel group, in my book. I know they did come back in the mid-2010s as sort of faces, but they're so much better as the arrogant heels that you want to see get their comeuppance.
Yeah, it's a really... It's an oddly weirdly stronger attitude. As you say, with them going, oh, we're going to talk to Triple H, and so we're the tag team champions, we deserve respect. You don't get that fairly swiftly when DX really gets going. They're a very clear hierarchy when DX properly kicks off, and they know their place at it. So it's odd to see them as a more affirmative. More first, no, yeah, we're not taking this from anyone kind of attitude.
Yeah, I quite liked it, to be honest. I thought it fit them quite well. Up next, then, we've got an NWA title match. Jeff Jarrett taking on Bradshaw. The build for this, so we saw the NWA come back at the Royal Rumble with Jarrett being flanked by Cornette. They've also got the New Midnight Express and Barry Windham, who turned on Bradshaw and has joined the NWA revival. The matches that they've had have all followed a similar sort of... similar pattern, with the NWA interfering in all of their matches, including one against Bradshaw where the LOD came out to make a save, and then Bradshaw returned the favor when they LOD had a tag match and Bradshaw came out to make the save as they were attacking him afterwards. Jeff Jarrett still very much in his Power Ranger get up here, and Bradshaw comes out to the ring trying to make everyone aware of the fact that he's from Texas, wearing cowboy boots, chaps, and a leather waistcoat. He also chases off members of the NWA with a bull rope. It felt weird that the ref was... so the ref gets rid of everyone apart from Jim Cornette, and the logic that we're given is that Jim Cornette has a manager's license. Where can I get a manager's license, Chris? Is it a tough exam to get one, do you think, or...?
Yes, I imagine it's a 5-year course. Yeah. Paul Heyman runs it.
Yeah. Your check usually bounces when Heyman runs it as well, to be fair. Like, he's running it though it's ECW.
That's how the new era of ECW got funded. It was a poorly, dangerously management academy.
Yeah. It fits his character pretty well, to be honest. JR cannot get enough of Bradshaw. Just talking about what a big young stud he is.
A southern boy, so of course he's going to like
it. He absolutely loves him. Jeff Jarrett focuses very much on the knee here. We get Jim Cornette interfering with his tennis racket, hitting Bradshaw in the knee. It's very much a focus of Jarrett to try and isolate body parts. Bradshaw does have a comeback with some power moves, hits a fallaway slam and a power bomb. We get a disqualification finish that pretty much comes from nowhere, as Jeff Jarrett just hits Bradshaw with the tennis racket blatantly in front of the ref. I quite liked it. This match was perfectly fine in terms of, the heel dominated for large stretches with the manager interference, Bradshaw having the big comeback. And then the ending just left me wanting something entirely different, I think. You could have had Cornette hit him with the tennis racket and Jarrett win. I don't think that would have detracted, like, taken anything away from Bradshaw. No, I know he's got the disqualification win, but being cheated out of a win is as bad or as good, I think, for it.
The thing was, though, it appears they gone for that kind of, because Jarrett tried to break Bradshaw's leg, yeah. and there was those attacks, and it was very much Bradshaw not out, or in the same way as when Shamrock snaps, but over a whole match, rather than focusing on winning the championship, it was Bradshaw just wanting to go out and hurt Jeff Jarrett. So for him to smash him across with the tennis racket.
It was Jarrett that hit Bradshaw with the tennis racket.
Sorry, Jarrett. That would have made far more sense if I was booking. It would have gone the other way.
I had to double check then, and I was like, I've got Bradshaw as the winner by disqualification. The way you booked it would have made way more sense for Bradshaw snapping
I'm so invested in the theme of Bradshaw just hurting Jeff Jarrett that I just completely lost where we ended.
That's okay. So after the match, the NWA guys come back out and they're beating down Bradshaw. So the Legion of Doom come out and chase them off, and we get the Legion of Doom and Bradshaw celebrating in the ring together.
I'm not sure if you, because obviously there's not the free view stuff that's on the pay per view and on the network.
Free for all.
I was reading around the pay per view as I'm wont to do, which, to be fair, this was really as dull as watching it. Apart from the fact that I saw in the free for all someone's doing an interview and Hawk accidentally wanders in the shot in the background because no one was supposed to know they're actually there or coming back. And on the free fall, he just accidentally turns around the corner and wanders in the frame.
So it wasn't a surprise when they came out because already knew it was about that.
Everybody saw the free fall knew that Hawk was already in the arena.
I think we're not too far away from Hawk's big problems with substance abuse coming to a quite ugly head, so that probably would make sense that he's just not really with it backstage and just wanders into camera when he's supposed to be. Imagine if I don't know, a Survivor like Series. I was about to say a Survivor Series of Punk had just appeared randomly like
on backstage.
Exactly. Backstage there we've got Triple H with Michael Cole. He's also with China. Triple H tells us that nobody can replace Shawn Michaels. Everybody wants to be part of DX, but but no one's good enough to join the group. So he's happy for it to be a handicap match, 4-on-3. Michael Cole says the WWF officials won't allow that, and they're going to force someone to join. It's an absolute shit show, this.
We have handicap matches all the time.
Yeah, there's handicap matches that happen all the time. But what I was more referring to was that the heels shouldn't be the ones that are saying, like, oh, we don't care, let's have it as a handicap match. That it should be, if anything, the faces that are in that predicament and happy for it to become a handicap match. It's just,
The writing directed is all over the shop tonight.
It's almost like there's been a very last-minute decision to take Shawn out, and it's suffering because of the lack of planning.
I've just got visions of an alternative universe where Michaels is in the engine. This is one of the classic pay per views.
Yeah,
probably maybe. Not.
Possibly not. We also have a backstage segment with the Nation of Domination with Doc Hendricks. He said, "I'm going to speak to the leader of the Nation," and the Rock grabs the mic, which really annoys Farouk and says, "You're out for an ass whooping." They show the chair shot that The Rock hits on Shamrock in the build to the match that we're going to have. And Doc Hendricks says that they should be worried because he's the most dangerous man on the planet. Farouk tells him that he grew up in the most dangerous neighborhoods on the planet, which I thought was quite a nice line. I was just watching The Rock as he was taunting to the camera the entire time.
Just mugging the entire time.
Just doing like the title thing. I think this might be the first time we really get the proper people's eyebrow as well that he is showing. But yeah, there's a... Whenever Farouk is talking, he's basically rolling his eyes and just taunting at the camera. Yeah, very entertaining. It's not like The Rock to make the focus all about him when someone else is ready for the spotlight. But anyway, let's not jump to 26 years in the future. So yeah, the match itself. So we've got the Nation of Domination, all five members taking on Ken Shamrock, Ahmed Johnson, and the DOA. Basically, all of the faces have been feuding with the Nation at various points. Ahmed Johnson, I can't remember a time when he hasn't been feuding with the Nation. Like, it just seems to be going on for a year.
It's like God said, let there be light. And then it opened up with a spotlight across above a ring with Ahmed Johnson fighting for a ring.
Yeah, exactly that. Shamrock and The Rock is the sort of main feud here, but the Nation have been attacking the rest of the faces as well. Shamrock took a hell of a brutal chair shot from The Rock in the build to this. It was a bit weird. So obviously the Nation come out all together with the Nation theme because they're a faction. It was slightly disconcerting to have all five guys on the face team come out to Shamrock's music.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like they're trying to cut down the running time.
This pay-per-view's, what, 2.25 hours, was it? And yeah, you could have added an extra 2 minutes, not even have all of the guys' entrance music. But yeah, having DOA come out on their bikes would have had the crowd even hotter.
Especially Ahmed Johnson, he gets massive pop whenever he comes.
Yeah, he does.
So you'd have thought they'd have had at least him. Because you could have DOA. I mean, what's that? That's only three separate entrances for the faces if you're going to do that.
Yeah, and you wouldn't have, you could have it, they come out, but halfway down the entrance way they start the next one. You wouldn't even have to have full entrances. So yeah, it just felt a bit weird that they just went with Shamrock's music and everyone coming out to that. So the action itself, so the Nation basically take control early on, and at any time it looks like there's a hope spot for the faces, they rake the eyes and dominate in the corner to stop any comebacks. Mark Henry comes in and demands that Ahmed Johnson comes into the ring as well. Quite impressively, he does a scoop slam on Mark Henry, but D'Lo attacks him from behind, stopping the momentum. As that's happening, JR tells us that Mark Henry is the strongest drug-free athlete in the world. It feels like you don't need to specify the drug-free part.
No, it's a weird claim. Who's running around at this point as well in the public claiming they're stronger than Mark Henry that necessitates him saying, oh yeah, but Mark Henry's the strongest drug-free athlete.
Yeah, who's not just saying they're stronger than Mark Henry, but are freely admitting that they take drugs at the same time. Yeah, it seems a very strange line on commentary. We get a frog splash from D'Lo Brown on Ahmed Johnson, where he basically covers three quarters of the ring, which I thought was hugely impressive.
I was going to say, talk about getting high. It's
like, yeah, he really flies across the ring. Ahmed Johnson and Farouk end up squaring off because, of course, they do. It's a WWF show in the 97-98 period. He hits a spine buster, but The Rock comes in to prevent the Pearl River plunge. Then we get a face-off between Rock and Shamrock. A lovely-looking DDT. Not the float-over DDT from The Rock, but the proper face, like, almost spike DDT with Shamrock's legs flying up above his head. We get the people's elbow, but Chains stops the count. I'm not sure if that would have been three, because obviously, at the moment, it's not really a finisher. I do quite like the continuity that the King was really excited about the fact about the people's elbow all the way back when it started, and then would continue to be ridiculously excited every time he sees a people's elbow for all eternity.
That's kind of things you go, yeah, I quite like. It is quite nice that someone's
he's just stuck with it. Yeah, it's fair enough. The match at that point devolves into a brawl with everyone hitting the ring. Shamrock hits a belly to belly on The Rock. For some reason, The Rock stands back up. He hits like an armbar takedown and then applies the ankle lock for the win. I feel like it would have been cleaner if he'd just gone belly to belly into ankle lock as he's done previously. I felt like the transition bit between the belly to belly and the sort of armbar takedown felt unnecessary. But yeah, quite enjoyed the finish with the chaos that we got.
Yeah, and Shamrock with a clean submission as well, which is Bill, considering the luck he's had recently, and they've done some decent stuff with building him, but they've also had some kind of setbacks where they could have pulled the trigger maybe a bit earlier. So at least someone running into WrestleMania is on is actually being on the right track for what the crowd would want, and the Shamrock looking like he could win big at WrestleMania.
Yeah, absolutely. And we get, after the match, some infighting between the Nation. The Rock's not happy. He feels like Farouk could have helped him out and not had him submit. He storms out of the ring, but Farouk basically takes control of the situation, orders everyone back into the ring, and then we get the Nation saluting to end the segment. Interestingly, that's the last we'll see of Ahmed Johnson. He leaves after this because of creative differences. So at least we got him to see him fight Farouk one last time before he left the company.
That was a dream match. I said would never happen, but
who would have thought we'd see it one last time. Michael Cole backstage has Steve Austin with him. He says that he doesn't care who the partner is, and he's going to kick ass in Texas, because if you can kick ass in Texas, that's something. I don't know what that means, Austin. It was quite a confusing promo.
People running around saying something, they want the sound clever, but are just big, that bears no scrutiny whatsoever.
No, absolutely. He does say that he might start with Michael Cole, and I have my fingers crossed to see him kick the shit out of him, but we don't get that, and we cut back to ringside. Up next, then, we've got Kane taking on Vader. We get a package before this one that's very much focused on Vader being dominant, and then the build to it, where Kane and Paul Bearer have been bloating about what happened at the Royal Rumble, and they've turned their attention to focus on Vader as the next sort of victim of Kane. Bearer, of course, used to manage Vader in the not-too-distant past and was in his corner, which I guess is the main reason that they've sort of turned their attention to him. In the build, Vader sprayed a fire extinguisher in Kane's face, and Kane set a clock on fire to show that he's sick of Vader time. The Vader face on there as well. It's very, very hammy, very beat you over the head with the metaphor.
They should have ran with that with Kane. They should have just got more and more obscure than that, more and more esoteric than metaphors.
He turns into like a carrot top sort of prop comedian in his later career. Well, it's better than that he turned out to be Kane, to be fair, but yeah.
It's just, oh God. They could have done, yes. I want a non-talking Kane, where it's just like, oh yeah, that abstract painting is about the loss of his relationship with The Undertaker in every match.
Yeah. As Vader comes out, JR tells us that Vader has won championships on more continents than he can count. There's only seven continents, JR. How can you not count to at most seven? Yes, an odd line on commentary. I was expecting this one to be probably the most physical match. Well, not just of the night, but potentially of the coverage that we've done so far. I just thought these two were going to beat the living shit out of each other.
Yeah, I mean, we get a decent brawl, at least.
Yeah, we do.
Big punt, Vader, big hitter. Yeah. I bet Kane's not moaning about him working stiff.
Although he's got a massive protective mask on his face, hasn't he? So the potatoes are blunted somewhat. We get a lot of kicks and punches and clotheslines from these guys. This what you'd expect, really, from both of them, I guess. Kane hits a flying forearm and DDT, which I thought were quite impressive. He goes for a chokeslam, but it gets stopped by a low blow. Vader hits his moonsault, but Kane sits up, and JR sells it like it's the most impressive thing that he's ever seen. And in fairness, the crowd popped pretty big when he sits up from that as well. Vader then sprays the fire extinguisher once again in Kane's face and hits a powerbomb. But Kane once again sits up, hits a chokeslam and a tombstone on Vader for the win. I thought this was the ideal way to showcase So Vader looked strong by taking Kane like further than we've seen other people take him in the past. But Kane looked like an absolute monster from being able to set up from some like pretty hard hitting offense from Vader.
Yeah, that's completely it. It's the ideal way to book Kane. You have him as a monster who is just this unstoppable monster, and you have him against Vader, who manages to come across as just, oh, no, I nearly said underdog. That's a lucky underdog. That's wrong. Yeah, Vader, who looks like a legitimate tough guy who's able to go a decent amount of a decent distance with someone who is unstoppable. Because no one's watching this expecting Vader the win you'd expect.
No, there can only be one winner of this match.
You're booking Kane look unstoppable. So the question is, how long do you manage to go before you succumb to the inevitable? And they get the balance exactly right, having Kane as a monster who was always going to win because he's unstoppable, and having Vader go as long as anyone possibly could before losing to him.
Yeah. It does make me, so my main thing at the end of this one was, this would have been, Vader would have been a good opponent for Shamrock, as opposed to him being in the world title match or the against Michaels a few pay-per-views ago. This is the sort of like spotlight, because Vader doesn't lose anything from losing, but he can really put someone over as looking great. So yeah, I felt like what they've done with Kane was really good, but it, to me, highlighted where it sort of went wrong by putting Shamrock in a match that he couldn't win, but they also didn't want him to lose. So, yeah. After the match, Kane's not done. He takes the fire extinguisher and throws it away. Presumably, he's terrified of fire extinguishers and fire. he then gets...
Flashbacks.
He gets what I'm going to describe as a cartoon wrench. It's a 6-foot wrench that he gets from under the ring that must be made of like paper mache, because he lifts it so easily. And he batters Vader with it, who then gets stretched away from the ring after Kane has hit him with it. Outside of kayfabe, he's now going away for a few months to replace a plate that he's got in his skull that's from a previous injury that has been re-injured. So this is why Kane hits him with the wrench from an actual real-life point of view, because they need a way to write Vader off. So it makes Kane look even more of a monster and brutal.
And just smart booking for maybe the first time tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. We get a recap package before the main event, and JR plugging WrestleMania, which the ideal opportunity for us to plug our next episode, which is the 29th of March for WrestleMania. Does that mean we have to wear full tuxedos? when you've got Football Manager and you've got a cup final coming up, you've got to wear a suit and tie for the final, right?
We'll have to get the tuxedo t-shirts on. get a few special cans of a Bud Light or whatever Austin was drinking at that time.
Miller not Light anymore. Not anymore. He's very much the Broken Skull IPA now. But maybe we can get him to send us a few if we tag him on Instagram, because he apparently always responds if you say if you're talking about his beer, because he wants the market in.
You know, I'm quite happy to shield for Austin's beer.
Yeah,
it's fair enough. You will see every post I put out on any social media now. I'm just going to work for a few Austin's Broken Skull IPAs.
The commentary team talk about the fact we're still not sure who it's going to be replacing Shawn Michaels in the main event. It feels like they're really building towards a massive surprise. So yeah, we'll look forward to that.
It was a surprise.
I was so shocked I could barely react. The package focuses, it's very similar to the one we get at the start of the show, focusing on how people are taking things too far. It felt like the package had been done the week before and it was too late to change anything, given that there was a big focus on Shawn Michaels being the sort of ringleader of the whole scenario here, where he's not even, we've not seen him on pay-per-view all night. So yeah,
they're not going to spend the money to go back and refilm it.
No, why would they? So our main event, so it's the New Age Outlaws, they come out first. Road Dogg gives the usual stick, and then he gives Triple H the sort of full ring announcer entrance as well, which I thought was quite cool, given that where we would go. I swear that at WrestleMania, with the backstage bits, Triple H was still on crutches. So maybe he came back too early and it gets re-injured here. But I was convinced when we saw him on crutches at the Rumble, I thought he was still on crutches all the way through to WrestleMania, rather than him having matches in between.
Yeah, I thought he was as well.
But yeah, here he is tonight. Very odd. Yeah, so Triple H comes out with the full DX strobe overlay video. I used to think that was a really good idea, but part of me just yearns to see what's happening in the ring rather than seeing Shawn Michaels and him doing crotch shots to people. But anyway, and then the mystery partner is revealed, the big drum roll, and Savio Vega is announced as his partner. It takes a while for his entrance music to come on, which really exaggerates the fact that the crowd have no reaction to Savio Vega being announced as the as their tag team partner. Talk about, you said it's just like they found him in catering, but yeah, talk about someone being put in a rough position here.
Yeah. Be fair, it's not Mysterio coming out of 30 rip position, but no. It's no win for him. He comes out and looks good, and everyone goes, well, yeah, you're wrestling in the main event, you should be half decent. He comes out and it doesn't work, and everyone's, oh, it would have been fine if Shawn was it, just because I had to replace him with Savio.
Yeah, really, yeah. As you say, a completely no-win situation. He does come out with a bin lid and some barbed wire. He's ready for a brawl. The face team comes out. So we've got Owen Hart with his weird sort of warning siren mixed trance music. I really can't stand it. We get Cactus Jack and Chainsaw Charlie. Cactus brings a trolley full of weapons out to the ring. And then we got Austin, and the crowd are ridiculously... reactive for him as he comes down to the ring. As I mentioned, it's been a shit event, but the crowd have been pretty hot throughout, apart from the Godwin's Quebecers match. This one kicks off at a breakneck pace. I really like the fact that we have a brawl start, because it's a non-sanctioned match, so they treat it as that and don't have normal tags.
Right.
Until about three quarters of the way through the match.
I've found another flaw of the logic. So 4-on-4 originally, then 4-on-3, and Triple H says, "Oh, we'll go out and just take them on as a three." Yeah. And they say WWE won't allow it.
Well, WWE, it's not sanctioned. It's got nothing to do with them.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah. Stay in a lane. Jesus Christ. Pick a story to stick with. I watching the start of this match made me think, I bet Chris is having a lovely time watching this.
I love a brawl. You know, I was also out of an awful pay per view. It's like, yes, I got to see a brawl, and I also got to see Barry Windham, and I'm always delighted to see Barry Windham turn up on any WWF programming.
Yeah, takes you back to a real brawl, WCW. Was it Starrcade 90?
Starrcade 90, yes. Starrcade 90, because I think 91's the following. Well, 91 would be the following year. That's how years
work. Yeah, that's how it works. Yeah. it's a fair comment.
I think it's 90.
Yeah. Well, this one, as I say, it reminded me of that, because it was just a similar sort of chaos that we saw in that street fight. There was just brawling on the outside with occasionally people going into the ring. Austin hits everyone in the head with a bin lid, which I quite liked. We get Billy Gunn power slammed through a table by Owen Hart. And he then goes for the sharpshooter, but Triple H breaks it up. So many binge shots on Chainsaw Charlie. was just staggering around the ring like a pissed old uncle. Owen Hart goes...
It's just one of those things, you look at him, you go, yeah, you're watching at the time, you go, oh, this is great. And you watch it now, you go, oh, this is not, if only someone had possibly realised that worked good for you.
That concussions might have a detrimental effect to your health. Yeah, who would have thought it? Owen Hart goes for the sharpshooter on Triple H, but it gets broken up by a brutal-looking chair shot. The New Age Outlaws hit a double powerbomb on Chainsaw Charlie onto some chairs. And then, for some reason, the commentary team play it up that the ref has managed to take control. But I really didn't like the fact that it just settled from that point on into a normal tag match.
Was there a ref? Is he going to get fired by WWF for going out and refereeing, scouting and taking the section match?
He's gone against the company's wishes to rogue, as you say. When it does settle into a sort of normal tag match with people standing on the apron, the heels just dominate. One bit that did make me laugh was Austin jumping off the apron, coming back on, and then just throwing a bin at Billy Gunn from the apron. But yeah, the heels were in complete.
I'd appreciate that. Sorry, like I was gonna say, I'd appreciate that more if that was a Sulo bin.
Yeah.
Outside the UK, you might not appreciate the fact that obviously the US has trash cans, whereas in the UK we have big, massive plastic bins which are about 4 foot, 5 foot tall.
Yeah, if it had been one of those, you might have killed him, to be fair. But still, would have been entertaining to watch, I guess. Cactus Jack has a bit of a comeback, puts a double mandible claw on both New Age Outlaws, but Triple H comes in, hits the low blow. It feels like the heels are taking advantage more of the non-sanction than the faces at this point in proceedings. Savio Vega then wraps Cactus Jack up in barbed wire, which... I don't care how gimmicked the barbed wire is. Even if it's just a strip of metal, it's still pretty fucking dangerous to put it in his mouth and like wrap him around it and start doing moves with that around. Why the faces decide not to come in and help him, I'm a bit perplexed by as well. Didn't make much sense.
Well, you brought this down here, Jack.
You put yourself in this position. We get an absolutely brutal chair shot as well on Cactus Jack by Savio Vega. Billy Gunn then goes to swing a chair with Road Dogg holding Cactus Jack, but Cactus ducks, so Billy Gunn takes out Road Dogg. And then we get the hot tag to Steve Austin. It very much feels like this match is from when it devolved into is probably the wrong word because it became more organized. But when it became a tag match, it felt like we were just waiting to get Austin in the ring. He comes in, absolutely batters everyone, hits the stunner on Road Dogg for the win. Then after the match, hits a stunner on Billy Gunn and knocks Triple H off the apron. After as well, China comes in and gets in Austin's face, pushes him, flips him off. Austin goes to leave and she flips him off between the ropes. So Austin comes in, sneaks up behind her, hits the stunner on China for a huge pop and send the crowd home happy. Austin building... to watch domestic Austin beating up a woman, as you say. But yeah, it feels like Austin's momentum couldn't be much higher building into WrestleMania next month. What did you think of the main event then, Chris?
As you say, one part great, out of control brawl, brilliant, because obviously, there's nowhere I'm going to go. I don't like to see this kind of disorganization. Out of control brawl, great. Chair shots, through chairs, through barbed wire. Brutal, and now you look back on it and go, ooh.
Lots of things that make you wince and think, I can see why we don't do this anymore.
But you know what, it's happened now, so... So I'm not gonna beat myself up too much for enjoying watching people get smashed over the head with a folding chair.
And then, as you say,
once it loses its way a bit once it settles down, because this is supposed to be just this unsanctioned match with the anger between them. Don't just start listening to the scab referee at that point and start tagging in and out.
Yeah, it felt very odd that they would listen to the ref at that point and not before. But
then again, you can't go street fight. But with that many people, you probably, and keeping attention on everyone, you probably couldn't have gone that brawl for 15 minutes and then had it end.
No, fair enough. What did you think of the pay-per-view overall then? I think that's a pretty good summary, to be honest.
You know what? It's the everyone. I'm always the same because I don't like ever slagging off any of the talent because they're out there doing stuff that I could never possibly do, and they go out there and they try their best to get over and give a good match on. No one's going out there to try to disappoint a crowd or bore them.
But in fairness, the crowd couldn't have been more hot for it. So I don't think they were disappointed by the action that we got, to be honest.
No, that's true. But I say, in general, as I say, no one ever goes, people don't go out there upset or bore or disappoint the crowd. But just the amount of filler, as we said, the most throwaway matches we've probably ever covered on a pay-per-view.
I think it's probably the most filler pay-per-view that we've ever covered as well.
In any way, shape, or form.
Exactly.
So that, no matter how hard you're trying, you're not going to keep my attention for matches that don't matter, things, storylines that have no end point or no impact whatsoever. Yeah. So you know what? Bless them for trying and trying to get something out of it, but it just was never going to work properly.
No.
And it was somewhat salvaged by Kane and Vader. And a good portion of the
main event
as well. So
I completely agree. What was your match of the night then?
Probably Kane and Vader. You know, I think just because it's anyone that managed to tell a consistent story. It was the one that was a good match. Neither of them come off looking worse. Kane looks a monster.
Yeah.
Vader looks legitimate, tough guy. It gives Kane proper heat going into WrestleMania and looking unbeatable.
Yeah.
The storyline makes sense. It proper booking to put Vader out for the surgery he needs at the end. It's the one match on the card where everything actually, if you're sitting down with someone going, oh, hey, this is, yeah, I know it's kind of co-main event. You go, hey, here's a match on a pay-per-view against someone that we have huge hopes for. How are you going to book this? And also, you have to put this guy out for a while.
Yeah.
And you go, this is an A-plus taper in how you do it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've gone for my match of the night as the main event, but it's probably more the first half of it. But then my MVP, I have gone Kane, because I think he has the stronger show. Maybe not the stronger showing in terms of what he necessarily does, but he looks like such a monster at the end of it that I think he just pips Austin and the momentum he's built from his showing tonight. So, yeah, I've gone slightly different in that I've gone main event match of the night and then Kane as the MVP for me.
I can see it. I think Kane probably MVP. For me, as you say, he's the one who comes. Austin's going to look a star regardless at this point.
Yeah.
Everyone, no matter what, he could have walked into the ring, flipped Triple H off, and just walked out, and everyone has still been going nuts.
You're absolutely right. Maybe it's just that I never want to give Vader any sort of match of the night credit, and that's why I'm focusing on Kane rather than Vader.
He's had some good matches. While we got the one with the Undertaker, which I really enjoyed.
What you're saying is he needs someone that's bigger than him, so he can't just bully them inside.
Vader was a massive star in Japan. He's a massive star in WCW, and there's the odd match that we come across in this run where, you know what, you can see just how good he is.
Yeah, fair enough. Any closing thoughts then before we somehow escape from Texas?
No, we're done. We're stuck here.
We're stuck here forever.
I I know what's coming up next. With obviously we're doing WrestleMania 14, and I am very, very much looking forward to this. This is, I haven't revisited it in a while because it's in the future, so that'll be back to the future. but from what I foresee,
some time machine's got nothing on us.
From what I foresee through the runes and the tarot cards, I foresee an absolutely blisteringly fun pay-per-view.
Yes, well, look forward to that on the 29th of March. Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss the episode, and follow us at Select Match Type across social media. Do you want to have a plug for Spit on Grades, Chris?
I will do, even though we're pretty fittingly for a horror podcast, we're very nearly dead. But no, we might come back and do something soon. So please, at Spit Grades on Twitter and on Instagram, and I Spit on Your Graves on Facebook for all your horror nerdy needs. Check us out. We haven't put anything out in a while. We might do, but we've got a hell of a back catalogue on there. So do us a favour and check it out. We appreciate it.
Cool. Well, thanks for listening. Thanks very much, Chris, as always.
Thank you very much for having me, Si. It's a pleasure.
And speak to you next time.